Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to an FA Cup special of the Premier League All Access podcast with me, Sam Matterface, and alongside me as usual, we have TalkSport's chief football correspondent, Alex Crook, and FA Cup winner, Scott Minto.
Cup is casting its magical spell and Neto scores a classic breakaway goal and the old gold is glittering.
Ellis Sims makes it three for him and three for Coventry City.
Haaland, and it's in for number five. He's rewriting FA Cup history in front of our eyes.
Lays it off to Gordon and there's the goal for Newcastle.
Palmer with an effort, edge of the box, sends a screamer in towards the near post and Chelsea are in front again.
Navadidi again working his magic down the left-hand side for Leicester City.
And from nowhere, Manchester United have constructed a second-half comeback. Two goals from Alejandro Garnacho.
And Darwin Nunez continues this very hot streak of scoring form on his 50th Liverpool start.
This is why we'll always love the FA Cup.
Scott and I have just about recovered from our midweek trip to Bournemouth, where we saw the biggest comeback in Premier League history in the last 20 years. Only three times has a team been 3-0 down at half-time and come back to win the game, and Bournemouth did that, and it was spectacular. We will talk in detail about it a little bit later on because it has implications for the Nottingham Forest game that Luton have on Saturday afternoon, and we'll get to that Premier League preview a little bit later on the podcast because it is very, very important. But of course, there's only one game. Scott, there is only one game in town this weekend, isn't there? Shall we start with Chelsea against Leicester?
Absolutely.
Oh, sorry.
There's another game? Before we get really stuck into it, is Cookie okay now? You know, because obviously we are, you know, sort of delaying this pod for an afternoon start so he can recover from Cheltenham. So I just want to make sure.
Yes, his hangover was bad this morning, so we had to have a 5-hour delay before we started our podcast. You and I up bright and breezy. You were texting me very early this morning, despite the fact that we were out ourselves until very late in the morning. We were drinking, which is naughty of us, but we did it. Crook obviously couldn't handle his intake, and as a result of that, had to delay things today for the second week in a row, if I remember rightly, because I don't think he turned up last week.
You didn't have to wake him up this week anyway, like we did last week when he was in Portugal.
Okay, let's wake you up by getting into Sunday afternoon's huge clash, the biggest quarterfinal of the weekend and one of the biggest games in English football.
There's nothing like Manchester United against Liverpool.
I'm not worried about Liverpool. We have to think about ourselves.
And Manchester United have won it. 10 injured, Ten Hag under pressure, tenacious and victorious. And they might still be able to get some silverware out of the wreckage of a disappointing season.
An era can come to an end.
As Klopp's Liverpool reign starts to come to an end.
The trophy hunt won't stop for Klopp.
They are a relentless winning machine.
And Mo Salah scores for Liverpool.
Rashford's got into the penalty. He's taken it wide and smashed it into the goal. It's 2-0 to Manchester United.
The FA Cup, the oldest and the best domestic cup competition anywhere around the world.
Another defining night at Old Trafford is on the card.
Manchester United against Liverpool kicks off on Sunday afternoon. And for a long time, this was the biggest game in England. It still is the clash of the Premier League's historical titans. The first meeting between the two of the Sir Jim Ratcliffe era. So, Crook, why have you turned down a ticket then?
Oh, how do I answer that one?
Because your missus told you weren't allowed to go.
You're on the record.
You know what? I've decided it's the less painful option than probably watching United get knocked out of the FA Cup.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, it is a huge, huge game, isn't it? And it's a key game for Liverpool as they look to try and forge their way towards a quadruple. From what I saw last Saturday afternoon and last Sunday afternoon, this is a non-contest, Scott, because one team concede more shots than is humanly possible to do so without conceding, and the other team take more shots than Alan Brazil at Cheltenham.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what? I have to say, I obviously wasn't involved in the pod on Monday, but I think that game, Liverpool City, was worthy of a Champions League final. You know, two of the very best teams in the world going at it, hammer and tong, at Anfield, which was superb. And I think that's the only saving grace that United might have, is that it's not at Anfield. I still can't see, really. I mean, I'm trying to work out a way of planning that United can beat Liverpool, but I think Liverpool can do it in every way now, even if they haven't got their best players out on the pitch. The youngsters have stepped up and have seen that they've got enough quality. There's enough resilience. If they go a goal down, they're the best in the Premier League at coming back and winning games and picking up points. Obviously, you know, in this case, getting through to the next round. I just don't see how United are able to do it. Again, it's probably going to have to be how they were against City. You know, defend very well. Maybe even a similar formation to what they did. Somehow someone comes up with a screamer and they defend better than they did in the second half against City, because I think Liverpool were absolutely sensational against City. I really do. So, yeah, I can't work out how United are going to get through this tie.
In the second half, I think they were. The problem that Manchester United have got, Crook, is they can't play like that at home, can they? They can't play like that at home in front of their own audience. They can't sit there behind the ball, try and swarm and stop Liverpool from coming onto them. They will be encouraged to attack, attack, attack in the Manchester United style, and that will cause them a massive problem.
Well, that hasn't really bothered Erik ten Hag so far this season. They were basically content to let Everton attack them. So I think it's exactly what they'll do. I think it's the only way that Ten Hag knows how to play against the big guns with this group of players. But I make you right. Obviously, I watched the game against Everton. United, very fortunate, very unconvincing in victory once again. And Liverpool were top class, particularly for the second half against Man City. And obviously, when the draw was made, I was sort of hoping that Jurgen Klopp might rest a few. But he doesn't need to, does he? They've got this Europa League game on Thursday where they were already through before the second leg, so he had the luxury of being able to rest players there. And then there's an international break, so he can afford to play his strongest team. Mo Salah will start, having come off the bench against Man City. So it's very hard to make a case for a home win.
Yeah, and Mo Salah scoring against Manchester United goes together like two turtle doves, doesn't it? Because he's got 12 in 12 against them. These two actually haven't played their second Premier League game of the season yet. And going back to the game in December, it actually finished in a 0-0 draw. Is there a way that Manchester United get something out of this, you know, get through to extra time, maybe even force penalty? Is there a way of them finding a victory and getting through to the semi-finals here, Scott? Or is that just beyond the realms of possibility? Are we looking at a massive 5-1 chance for them to go through?
Look, I mean, it's still Manchester United, and at home, as you say, you know, they were able to negate Liverpool, but I don't think they're going to be able to negate them here. You know, they're going to have to score and they're going to have to come at them. And, you know, whether it be Rashford, whether it be Garnacho, it's going to have to be one of those two, really. Bruno comes up with a brilliant set piece, and then they just defend in the way that they did in the first half against City. But that's almost what they're playing for. And it's a really sad state of affairs when you think about it, that United at home, whoever they come up against, are almost playing for extra time and penalties.
And, that's kind of my point, really. Is, you know, the question we're sort of asking here is Manchester United are sort of playing the underdog in a game against Liverpool, which is the kind of thing that really will irk Manchester United supporters. Certainly the kind of things that will get under those stalwarts of Old Trafford bygone era in Sir Alex Ferguson and even Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who has talked about knocking Liverpool and Manchester City off their perch again. I mean, the fact is that perch is so far away at this moment in time. This game highlights it, doesn't it, Crook?
Yes, it does. And the Manchester Derby highlighted it. And I'm sure the league game against Liverpool will highlight it as well. They've got Arsenal to come to Old Trafford. That will highlight it. But this feels big for Erik ten Hag. Because I think the only way he can convince his doubters is by winning a trophy, because they're not going to get in the top four. So this is United's biggest game of the season. But I just don't have any confidence they're capable of producing a performance worthy of the occasion. I think a lot of United fans who are braving it, they'll be going to Old Trafford with a very negative mindset. And
so is that the reason you really are not going? You've bottled it. Is that the real reason you're not coming? You're bottling it.
The true United fans are still going, even though they're negative, but they're still going.
Right. Okay. Well, we've got a spare ticket now for someone to come along and sit in Crookie's seat. So if you want to contact us,
are you offering it as a competition prize to one of our loyal listeners?
No, I am not. No.
What I would say, Sam, is you know, and Crookie actually sort of slipped it in there without anybody thinking or fully realising, although you did react to it. Liverpool could be even better than they were last week because Mo Salah starts.
Mm.
That's scary.
Well, they will be better than they were last week because one of the big issues that they had last week was converting chances in the second half. Diaz missed an absolute hatful. That won't happen if Salah is on the end of those chances, right?
Absolutely. He's you know, for years now, he is what he is. He's a goal machine. He does miss chances, I have to say, but he just gets in the place so many times that, you know, yeah, he's going to have five or six chances and he'll put one or two of those away. Again, you know, just looking, you know, Rashford's got to be the Rashford of last season. Garnacho, I think, will be an interesting one. Whoever comes up against, you know, the fullbacks, I think that's maybe something that Liverpool could be got at. But whether it's Conor Bradley, whether it's Joe Gomez playing left back, right back, they've come in and they've been really, really good. But if I'm Ten Hag, that's where I'm thinking that there might be a possibility of a one-on-one situation that my wingers, who are incredibly talented, might be able to get the better of their fullbacks in a one situation where suddenly they're clinical, they score and they hold on. But that's the best way of doing it. And you say about the United fans, I think they accept it. I think they accept it, like they accepted it against City before the game. We're quite happy to sit back and we'll take some of them were saying we'll take a 3-0 now, because of what it could have been. So I think United fans would absolutely accept a defensive display, that everything has to go in their favour. They have to be clinical, they have to defend brilliantly, and Liverpool have to be nowhere near where they were last week.
I think Van Dijk snaffles Rasmus Højlund, even if Rasmus Højlund is fit and it's not 100% sure that he is going to be for this game. I think Wataru Endo will snuff out the danger that Bruno Fernandes can pose. The left-hand side is interesting because Garnacho has been playing on the right for Manchester United. So that's the Liverpool left. Robertson looks like he's getting back to full fitness. He likes to go on. That might leave gaps for Garnacho to exploit. But if they wanted to plug it, they could play Gomez over there. The right-hand side, Conor Bradley's just been called up for the Northern Ireland squad. He'll get forward down that right-hand side. And if Rashford doesn't do the work, you've got Salah and Bradley going down that right-hand side. And if Rashford isn't tracking back, then whoever plays at left-back, when it's probably going to be Lindelof, has a real problem. So there's a lot of battles, key areas of the field where Liverpool are significantly better. Andre Onana's going to have a great game if he's going to they're going to see this through or get anything from the match. And actually, I think he probably deserves a mention because he has improved. And if you speak to people at Manchester United, you can see over the course of the last couple of months that certainly has gone on his form has gone on an upward trajectory in the last few months. But United have failed to score in six of their last nine meetings with Liverpool in all competitions, including in the last two. They haven't gone three meetings without scoring a goal against them since 1977. Crook, that's the year you were born.
He's older than that, surely.
Not quite. You're right to mention Onana. I think he has improved. I think he's made some big saves in big games recently. And I think he will need to be at his best if they've got any chance. But they did beat them in the FA Cup, didn't they? Last time they met at Old Trafford, Bruno Fernandes scored the winner.
Mm, they beat them in the last cup. Well, they beat them...
last season, I was there for that one. Had a ticket for that one.
Last season, yeah. Because I was doing that for... you turned up to that one, yeah. Well done. I was doing it for Sunday session, I think, on that day. Right, but it's going to be a cracking game. Looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a special occasion as well. And maybe Manchester United buck the trend, but I think Liverpool is such a good outfit at this moment in time. That's unlikely. Talking of good outfits, Leicester go to Chelsea on Sunday. I think Chelsea were better on Monday night. Still give away far too many chances and give away far too many goals. They've progressed from 7 of their last 8 FA Cup ties against Leicester. The only exception, of course, being the FA Cup final of 2021. It's all about this, though, isn't it, for Poch and Chelsea? Scott Minto?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the table, they're struggling. It was a good win, you have to say. You know, they're still in the bottom half, though, although they could finish. I think, you know, they need to be aiming for seventh. And if they could finish seventh and win the FA Cup, then that would be seen as respectable and certainly a good end to the season, which they can build on for next season.
Conference League.
Yeah, I know, but it's actually the momentum going into next season. And look, while you're still kind of not sure, Poch has turned around and said, I still haven't been able to play my best 11. I'm not quite sure who is in his best 11. Is it a Reece James and Chilwell? Is it Fofana at the back? We'll know, but there's enough players there to try and sort out. I think if they get that striker, then that could change a lot. I'm not saying they'd change their challenge for the Premier League itself, but I think they'd definitely be a challenger for Champions League next season. If they were to get a top striker that puts the ball in the back of the net, because chances, as we know, hasn't been a problem creating. And what I can tell you as well, from a player's point of view, when you're under the cosh and you're not playing particularly well and it's one of those and maybe the fans are on your back a little bit, if you have that striker that can suddenly produce a goal out of nothing and you nick a win, it's amazing how that confidence then builds and momentum builds around the whole team and then around the fans. And then suddenly it's an easier place to play. So I think, you know, whatever happens with PSR, don't know. Put all your money, all your chips on getting that top striker. And I think Chelsea will be a challenging for top four.
Well, hold on a second. 4 goals in 7 games, a delightful little flick on Monday. Yes, raw and certainly frustrating at times. But isn't it actually time to admit that Nicholas Jackson is Chelsea's second biggest threat behind Cole Palmer and therefore quite good value for a striker at £29 million? He's got 12 goals this season, Crook.
He's still raw. And I think if you're talking about a top-level striker...
We've admitted that.
Yeah, but are Chelsea going to get to where they want to get with Nicholas Jackson? They're not. So I think Scott's right. I think they do need to invest in a proven top level.
He's 22.
Yeah, so he's one for the future, but he's not going to carry them into the Champions League and get them challenging for the biggest prizes again.
Well, they're not going to be doing that in the next couple of years anyway, are they?
Well, Pochettino's only got a 2-year contract.
So, they're not going to be in the Champions League next year. They're probably not going to challenge for it, or they may challenge for it next year. So they're certainly not challenging for the title or playing in the top level of European competition to at least 25-26.
I think Pochettino would want to challenge for a Champions League place next season in his second
season.
Challenge. Otherwise, he won't get a new contract.
No, Sam, look, you know me. I've defended Nicholas Jackson. I feel like I've been on my own defending him all season. And the numbers aren't bad at all. But this is Chelsea Football Club that needs to find a way that, and it is step by step, chasing Champions League and then the Premier League and then the Champions League as well. They're a million miles away from those two last things, but I honestly don't think they're a million miles away from a fourth spot next season. You can't rely on Nicholas Jackson saying, right, he's now going to get even better and he's going to get 15 to 20 goals. Again, I go back. I've defended him when things weren't going well. He's become stronger just in the last few games. It was a beautiful little flick that he scored for the goal against Newcastle. Plus, I thought his general hold-up play was very, very good and the centre-halves for Newcastle weren't able to handle him. But you can't pin your hopes on him for scoring 15 to 20 goals, which is what Chelsea need as a centre-forward. He's a great backup. He's a great one for the future, but for next season, and especially for Poch, absolutely massive season for Poch, if he's there next season. And I hope he is, but they've got to go for that striker, and then we'll see what happens. But look, if you want to carry on talking about that, that's fine. But bringing it round to this game, I'm at the game. I'm doing the game for TalkSport. I'm obviously hoping that Chelsea do get through. And they're up against the Leicester side that, my goodness me, there's no doubt about it, in the back of their mind, it's all about the league.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll rest Jamie Vardy because he keeps getting them out of trouble. They're top of the Championship, Leicester, 82 points in 37 games. Good numbers, but that gap has been closed recently because they've had a bit of a stutter and a bit of a stumble. I mean, from a Chelsea perspective, you'd expect them to get through this tie, but I've seen Chelsea expect to get through a number of ties over the course of the last few years and not manage it. I think this is a really tough game for them on Sunday. And I think the way that Leicester play will cause them issues. The one thing I will say is the atmosphere at Stamford Bridge for cup games has been absolutely terrific, because they absolutely know that this is the centre of their universe this year.
I don't think it is as tough a game as you're making out. I was at Bournemouth when Leicester won there. He made 9 changes for that game, and he made it pretty clear that the league is their priority. They're having a bit of a wobble when it comes to that. I'm not sure you're going to see Leicester's first team in this game, despite the fact they too have got an international break coming.
Great.
I think Chelsea might go through quite easily.
I hope you're right. Just to let you know, Scott, I'm going to make a major statement here, right? Okay. And I think this is something you should keep and think about for later, and see if you can come up with an alternative for me. Okay. I think that by the time we get to the end of this season, maybe the end of next, right, Nicholas Jackson will be the third best Chelsea striker of the last 2 decades.
Okay, so after Drogba and Costa.
Yeah. Mainly that's because everybody else has been absolute guff. but
they are the two that everyone kind of relates to. Even Didier Drogba was a bit unfair to people, but even Diego Costa, he was brilliant for a few seasons, wasn't he? But Poch especially, but Chelsea needs ready-made players now.
There is no stopping them. United unable to defy the odds or deny the neighbours.
Just take a look all over Europe. If you're capped for one game, how difficult it is for everyone.
And the treble is still on, the double treble.
De Bruyne is in right inside of the area. Haaland walks it in. His City's fourth. He's rewriting FA Cup history in front of our eyes.
Absolutely committed to the FA Cup to do well. We have been all season.
It's a day of utter Geordie jubilation. They're going to knock Sunderland out of the FA Cup.
I think lots of challenges for us to rise to and overcome and hopefully get through to the next round.
Newcastle are through to the last 8.
You realise that to win the FA Cup, you're probably going to have to beat Manchester City. You have to give everything to try and win, and it will be difficult, but we can do it.
Well, Newcastle United are hoping to reach their first semi-final in almost 2 decades, but it is a tough game, isn't it? Because they go to Manchester City. Manchester City have had no midweek commitments. They've got 2 weeks where players will go off to international duty before they play their Arsenal game. So it's not as if he's going to rest absolutely everyone for this match. Newcastle have had a roller coaster season. How do they find a way to win this game, Crook?
I don't think they do, to be honest. And I think you have to say, and I've mentioned it before, they've had terrible luck when it comes to the cup draws. You look at their Champions League group, you look at the teams they had to play in the League Cup, and now Manchester City away, which was the most difficult tie left on the table for this quarterfinal. And they picked up injuries on Monday night as well. So no Kieran Trippier. I think Dan Burn hobbled off, didn't he? Anthony Gordon, although his knee injury isn't as serious as it's been suggested in some quarters, he won't play. They were already without several first teamers anyway, so it's going to be a home win, unfortunately, for Eddie Howe. And you know, this is their season, isn't it? In the same way that Pochettino needs a trophy, Eddie Howe does as well, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, he actually said to me after the Arsenal game that the Blackburn game was so massive because they needed to put sort of basically their eggs in that basket. A question on TalkSport earlier in the week was, Scott, does Eddie Howe and other English managers get an easy ride because they are English? And I just want to try and debunk that, because I don't think that's true. I actually think the opposite is true. I think they get a lot more scrutiny, and they get, as soon as people get excited about them, there's another group of people that just want to tear them down. Newcastle are a mid-table side. A look at the squad will tell you they're a mid-table squad. It overachieved last year, and it is underachieving this year. They get top four. They got to a cup final. They almost meet Paris, beat Paris Saint-Germain, probably should have done. But at the same time, they have been dreadful defensively when last year they were brilliant defensively, especially away from home. They've been terrible this year defensively. They weren't great on Monday. They're always entertaining to watch. Their games average over, well, nearly four goals per game. I think it's 3.8. But what I don't like, and what I feel is, if people who aren't Newcastle fans or people who don't watch them on a regular basis, just see the results or whatever, are desperate to say, well, he's a bad manager because they are in this situation. And I don't understand that. Can you tell me, if am I wrong here?
No, you're absolutely spot on. And I said this on the breakfast show a couple of days ago when Alan Bazil asked me the question about it. And look, it was only a couple of seasons ago they were fighting relegation. Now, last season we spoke about it, how individually and collectively, that was a complete overachievement with the squad that they got. One final where they felt they could have won, but they didn't really sort of turn up. But getting into the top four was just nothing short of sensational, as you say. A shocking decision at Paris, and they wouldn't have chased the game against Milan. They have the richest owners in the world, but by far not the richest club because of PSR. So he's got one hand tied behind his back. Then you talk about all the injuries he's had as well. And like, everyone can say they've had injuries, but they haven't got the deepest squad. So there's injuries to key players. And especially, again, you talk about the most important parts of the pitch, both boxes. You know, the number one goalkeeper's been injured for some time. And you've talked about the stat of the amount of goals they've conceded. And then there's either Isak or Wilson, or at times both, who have been injured. And they've had to play with a false nine. Now they've got Anthony Gordon out and Kieran Trippier as well. That, yes, they're conceding lots of goals, especially away from home. And they're playing at the Etihad, one of the, along with Anfield, most difficult places you could go to in world football. I really feel for Eddie Howe. And I think it's lazy of people to say that, you know, he should be under pressure, because actually the job he did last season has put himself under pressure, because everyone's saying, well, anything, you know, you don't do what you did last season is going backwards. No, that was an absolute unbelievable, spectacular season. And this is really where they should be, chasing for a European place.
But the debate isn't black and white, is it? I mean, it's not either Eddie Howe's a hero and he shouldn't be asked any questions, or he's useless and he should be turfed out. It is maybe a little bit of the middle. He's a very good manager. He clearly has got the opportunity, or should have the opportunity, to rebuild this team in the summer and go again. They can be criticised for some of their failures. They can be criticised for some of their failures. But at the same time, you have to put it in the context of why those failures have come about. And I think sometimes we sort of just go, it's either this or it's either that. And it's sort of a little bit in the middle. I'm sort of gearing towards the fact that I think he's great, but there are concerns there that they've got to somehow try and address. And certainly defensively, they've got to address them this weekend.
Yeah, that's been their big issue all season. They've conceded too many goals, and certainly in the second half of the season since Nick Pope got injured, that's been a real problem. I think they were naive in that Champions League group, particularly in the final game. I think they probably should have just shut up shop there and at least got some kind of European football into the second half of the season. So I think you can point to some mistakes that Eddie's made. But I remember speaking to him in the summer, actually, for TalkSport, and I asked him the question, could expectation be your biggest enemy this season? Because they finished in the top four, they got to a cup final, which they hadn't done for a number of years. The only way was down. I know you joke about the better habit, Jim White. I couldn't make a case for Newcastle finishing the top four this season. I think they overachieved last year. So I think they're probably around about where they should be, challenging for a European place potentially, and very unlucky with the cup draws. If they were playing Coventry, they'd probably be in a semi-final. They'd be back at Wembley again.
Yeah, look, what I would say as well, and you're right, Sam, it's not one or the other. It's not we love Eddie Howe or we hate Eddie Howe. You know, let's try and analyse it. From the outside, the bigger picture, we've tried to sum it up. But is there anything that he could do differently? Well, in the Wolves game, he did. You know, he did sort of didn't play that high press, high intensity. Mm. You know, they picked and chose the right times to go forward. And you know, I would then argue, well, you know, they had their best players out. Neto came off at halftime. Cunha wasn't playing. Huang wasn't playing. It was injured. But still, I think there are times, and you have to pick and choose, where you can't just say, well, this is who we are. We do 4-3-3. We try and press. We try and play with that high intensity, because that's also where the injuries come from. So, look, it's not totally blameless, but I think what he's done, the bigger picture, is just incredible. And he deserves the chance to go again next season. And I hope he's given money, because if he's given hundreds of millions of pounds and they're mid-table, absolutely have a go at him and say maybe he's not the right man. But he's not even able to do that.
You mentioned Wolves, and they take on Coventry Saturday 12:15, unbeaten in the last five games against Coventry. First such meeting, though, since 2013, I think. So it's 11 years since they last met one another. I spoke to Josh Eccles, the Coventry City midfielder, today, and he was telling me that actually they feel they can take advantage of Wolves' injury issues. They've been working incredibly hard tactically to try and come up with a plan. They had their own disappointment at Wembley last year when they lost the playoff final on penalties, and they believe they can go back there again. Do you think they can, Crook?
I think it's a really difficult game, to be honest. Not too many Premier League teams win at Molineux. I think for Wolves, they're in no danger of going down. They're probably not quite European challengers. So again, this is probably their biggest game of the season. That's what's so great about this weekend. What it means to a lot of the teams who are in the quarterfinals. The FA Cup's been a malign competition, but I think this season, again, has dispelled that particular myth. I was with a Coventry fan, actually, on Tuesday, and he was saying that he would swap a place in the playoffs for an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley. I wonder if that's the common consensus amongst Coventry supporters.
Interesting. Okay, it's not only the FA Cup this weekend. We've got some big Premier League games too.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
And they don't get any bigger than Nottingham Forest away trip to Kenilworth Road. Luton have got goals. They're the top scorers in the bottom nine. Nottingham Forest record on their travels. Only Sheffield United have picked up fewer points on the road this season, Scott. But Luton have got a crookie-sized hangover from Wednesday night. In fact, they too would have delayed their podcast till 1 o'clock because they had such a bad head after what happened to them on Wednesday. Brilliant game, fantastic to watch, but not if you have got any association with Luton.
No, and what I didn't tell you, Sam, actually, when we were having that post-match beer, as the Luton team were coming in to the hotel as well, was that I actually got cramp in both legs after the game. So I got cramp watching the game. It was just incredible. And look, it wasn't just a big win for Bournemouth. It was a big win for Forest, for Everton and for Brentford as well. Because, you know, if Luton had have won that game, and let's face it, they should have done, then I think you're bringing in those teams that I've just mentioned and perhaps even those above, maybe not Crystal Palace, but wow, you know, it was just a great game to be there. And I'm someone who not tries to use too many superlatives, but just because it's Bournemouth and Luton, I still doesn't detract from the fact that's one of the greatest Premier League games that we've seen because of the comeback, and it's only happened twice before.
Yeah, I'm just going to read you a series of text messages that came through last night. Me, this is a belting performance from Luton. This is at 20 past eight. Crook, they're going to do it and they'll send Forrest down. That was 20:33. This is 21:31. Me, two eyes. Crook. That's a shocker from Luton. They're f***ed now.
Do you know the worst thing? I don't even remember that exchange.
That's the ultimate flip-flopping, that, isn't it? In the space of an hour.
Outstanding. Yeah, I spoke to Rob Edwards afterwards, and he did look as I just suggested, because he, and listen, I felt so sorry for him. He spoke really, really well. And a lot of the attention will be on Luton's collapse and how they allowed that to go. And I think tactically, they just need a little bit more protection to that back three. They just need to stiffen up and not give them any impetus. They were unlucky. The Dominic Solanke goal, I thought, was going to be ruled out for offside. I think that just would allow them to catch their breath if it was. I then thought that the second goal, I mean, crikey. I mean, I don't know whether it went over the line or how far it went over the line, because, again, although we saw replays, a bit like the offside goal, we didn't get the proper technology to show us. We didn't, you know, we didn't see that sort of that goal decision system image. So again, that was another unlucky moment, but then after that, I mean, they capitulated absolutely, and the two goals from Semenyo were brilliant, and he should have had a one before that as well. Yeah. Which would have made the hat trick. He was terrific. So how do they regather themselves
just on the game itself? And you're right, and I actually, when I was leaving the hotel in Bournemouth this morning, I got into the lift with a Luton staff member, and we sort of looked at each other and raised our eyes, and we had a quick chat, and his words were, we've got to learn how to control the game. And you're absolutely right. And I'm a big Ross Barkley fan, but that was where I was wanting him to step up and say, right, you know, I'm international class. I can see what's happening here. My back three are coming under pressure and I'm going to get hold of the ball. Maybe it's unfair to talk about him like that, but if you were looking at him for possibly, you know, England, then that's what you're looking for. And psychologically, Sam, this is massive. I would say out of all the teams that are down there, I think Luton are probably the most resilient mentally. But still, when you think about the games they've got the other side of the international break, Spurs away, Arsenal away, Bournemouth at home, yes, but Man City away, three of the next four, they're not picking up a point. So this week was absolutely crucial. And whether, you know, 4-3, 1-0, it's kind of the same in terms of goal difference, but it's not in terms of the psychology of it, because they blew it. They absolutely blew it. And now they're coming up a game against Forest, and we won't know until the game starts as to whether they've recovered or not. But if they don't and they lose that, I think, and they've still got enough winnable home games from now to the end of the season, but we'll look back as that's the week that put Luton down.
Oh, yeah, it's a crucial weekend. And if they were to beat Nottingham Forest, they go above them, which psychologically would have an effect the other way. Can they bounce back and do that against Nottingham Forest side? Look, you can see what they're trying to do, can't you? You can see the organisation that Nuno has put in there. But I just think, actually, they do have such a threat going forward, Luton, that if they can get a couple of goals against Nottingham Forest, like they did against Bournemouth, I'm not necessarily sure that Nottingham Forest have got similar sort of firepower to Bournemouth. I don't know. And the Kenilworth Road crowd will play a massive part as well.
Yeah, it will. Although I just wonder how many gut punches Luton can take, because obviously this was an extreme example, giving away a three-goal lead. But there's been a lot of games this season. Aston Villa, they get it back to 2-2 and they concede in the last minute. Arsenal at home, Declan Rice wins the game in the last minute. Liverpool at home. It's really difficult, I'd imagine, for Rob Edwards to having to keep on picking these players up. And they've lost their best defender.
you know, Tom Lockyer, brilliant to see him at the game on Wednesday night, and Bournemouth really gave him the welcome that he deserved. But he is their best defender, and that's a big factor in the fact they're conceding so many goals and they look so vulnerable defensively.
Yeah, well, he's not the only one. I mean, Tom Lockyer has obviously been missing, but Gabe Osho is missing. He's been terrific. The boy Amari Bell's not been playing either because he's got a hamstring issue. So you've got their first choice three central defenders. Although I must admit, I think Mengi has played particularly well. I think he's a good central defender, Mengi. But you know, they've had injury issues, and those injury issues have cost them. And they don't carry the big squads like the others carry a big squad because they haven't got the budget to do so. It's not the only big game of the weekend in the Premier League. West Ham against Aston Villa. Aston Villa need to bounce back from last week. They've won the last three away Premier League games. They're looking to win four successive Premier League away games for the first time since a club record, eight straight wins about 15 years ago. Scott, what's happened to Jared Bowen? He's scored in just one of West Ham's last 10 Premier League games. That was when he scored the hat-trick against Brentford. Why have West Ham lost their attacking thrust?
Well, I've said for some time that he's doing a very good job in a position that he's not really accustomed to. He's not a centre-forward. You know, West Ham need to get a centre-forward. We talked about Chelsea needing one. Well, you know, West Ham need one. And imagine just in behind, you've got Pakatar, Kudus and Bowen. You know, that's a hell of a front three plus your striker. So they've got to find a way in the summer to get that striker. And you're, as I say, you know, he was excellent, wasn't he, of course, against Brentford.
Mm-hmm.
But you're asking him to do a role that is a very, very difficult role, especially with his physique as well. If you're the lone striker, to ask him to be able to hold the ball up, to drop off, run the channels, yes, he can do because he's fast and he's full of running. But it's just not an easy role. And I always think he's better coming off on the wing. But look, you know, in terms of West Ham, I think Kudus coming back from the AFCON and Pakatar being fit again, I think has been very, very important. So look, they're in that position of seventh at the moment. They want to try and keep that as much as possible. But I think it's a massive game for Villa after what happened last week.
Absolutely. Bowen's done well enough to get called up into the England squad, so congratulations to him. But Calvin Phillips has not been included, which I think probably most people anticipated. Defensively, they have got a bit of a problem, West Ham. They've conceded far too many goals. They've conceded 16 goals in the last six Premier League games. That's an issue that they need to solve, especially against an Aston Villa team that have a very reliable attack. Fulham against Tottenham Hotspur. Mickey van der Ven out. His speed allows them to play that high-stakes game. So how much does that tip the balance in favour of a Fulham side that have won six of their last nine in the Premier League at home, Crook?
I was going to say that Craven Cottage form has been really impressive of late. And they will fancy their chances against a Tottenham side who you can't always rely upon. I mean, if Tottenham turn up and play like they did against Villa, then you would fancy them to win, but their performances leading up to that Villa game weren't particularly convincing. So I guess it's a question of which Tottenham side turn up. I think they'll concede Spurs. I mean, what was that, their first clean sheet in about 300 years under Ange Postecoglou? Fulham have got attacking weapons. The fact that they're going to lose money on this Breuer deal because Muniz is playing so well tells you all you need to know about where their biggest threat will come from. So I think this is going to be a really good game, actually. And Marco Silva, by the way, was someone who was mentioned to me as a potential candidate to replace David Moyes at West Ham.
Well, listen, I think he's done very well, Marco Silva. I mean, obviously, you always slagged him off, Crook, and suggested that he's not as good as he thinks he is. But actually, I think he's proved he's done a very, very good job, and he's a capable manager. Would you like to backtrack on that now? Would you like to say, sorry, Silva, I love you?
I think I questioned his loyalty, actually, and he's proved his loyalty to this point
because
he signed
Saudi Arabia.
A contract at Fulham instead of going to Saudi Arabia. I don't know if I ever questioned how good a manager he was.
Well,
I think you did.
I have to try and get the producers to keep a log of how many times you flip flop and how many times you change your mind. We'd probably have to employ an actual member of staff just to catalog that.
Absolutely.
They'd be one of the highest paid
members at TalkSport as well. Let me tell you, certainly the hardest.
Especially if they're being paid an hourly rate. Spurs have won each of their last seven trips to Craven Cottage, though, so that might change your mind, Crook. You never know. That's a good opportunity for them maybe to extend that. We shall see on Sunday, I think. Saturday, I think it is. Burnley against Brentford. Burnley without a win in 10 Premier League games. They've taken 3 points from the last 30 available. They've lost 20 of their last 28 Premier League games, the most defeats ever at this stage of a season. And they've got the worst home record in the league. I mean, it's a big game, this, because if Brentford win, it puts a little bit of distance between them and the bottom three. But I must admit, when I was studying ahead of the Luton game and looking at the bottom two, Scott, it infuriated me a bit about how uncompetitive those two bottom sides have been.
And perhaps we saw it coming with Sheffield United, but we didn't see it coming with Burnley. And I think that's what probably we're most disappointed about. And talk about maybe managers not receiving criticism. I think Chrissy Wilder gets a lot of criticism at Sheffield United, but Vincent Kompany doesn't seem to get any. And this is the side that absolutely romped home last season in the Championship. Now, you know, I respect him a lot. I think he's going to be a very good manager. But this is you can't dress it up anything other than an absolutely shocking season. They've won one game at home. You know, how can that be? So I'm sure the Burnley fans are really, really disappointed. At the start of the season, it was brilliant that Kompany stayed on. But I think if he hadn't have had that season last season, he probably would be gone by now. I hope he, if and when they do go down, that they go right back up and they recruit better. I think that's been a real problem. But in terms of this, Brentford, another one that's gone under the radar. You know, as I say, and that's why I mentioned them earlier, it was a big win for them last night for Bournemouth, because otherwise, you know, what Luton would have been on 24 points and Brentford only 2 points ahead of them.
I don't think Brentford have won since Crook last had a pint. I mean, it's been such a long time, has it? When was the last Brentford won a game? I mean, they've been on this absolutely dreadful run of... They beat Wolves, didn't they, away from home at the beginning of February. They beat Nottingham Forest at home. But they're their only two victories since the 2nd of December. That is a huge amount of time. And if you look, two wins over the course of, what is it, 5, 10, 15...
13, isn't
19
it,
games. Wow. In all competitions, it's amazing. It's such a bad run. And that's why they've plummeted towards the bottom of the table. And they're now sitting there, 26 points. That they'll have enough because the others are so bad at converting chances and converting matches into points. So you probably would expect them to escape. But they're the last ones of that batch towards the bottom of the table that are competing with Luton, aren't they? Brentford, Everton and Nottingham Forest. Crook, thank you very much for your time. Go get yourself an Alka-Seltzer. I know that it was very hard for you to contribute today because for your ailments picked up in Cheltenham. He also hasn't won anything by his time in Cheltenham, by the way, fellas. He spent 2 weeks studying and then got to Cheltenham and absolutely blew up. I mean, everything went wrong. And then some fella that he knows very, very well put a little wedge on a horse in the champion chase yesterday, and it came in at 14-1. And, aww, you know, that person didn't even mean to do it.
Who was that?
I don't know. I can't remember. But he wasn't very happy, and he just went, why did I bother spending the last 2 weeks studying? And then
2 days to
off.
Go, yeah. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Just think of all that wasted time he could have spent with his family.
Will he be able to do that this weekend? Now he can't be bothered to go to Manchester exactly. United against Liverpool. So enjoy your weekend not doing any work or going to any football, Crook. And Scott, we will see you, I suppose, Sunday night, with me and Crook are doing Sunday night in my house. That's changed now because you're not going to bother coming up. So we'll
that
have
means
to rearrange
we can get Scott
all
involved,
of our plans. We'll have to rearrange all of our plans again. That's it from us. Make sure you tune in to Talk Sport. Champions League draw is Friday. It's going to be a big one.
Hey, Sarah, whatever will be, will be. They're going to Germany.
Players coming in, they are opportunities and you have to grasp them.
Palmer with an effort, edge of the box.
I didn't realise how good he was. Brilliant footballer.
It had to be! Ivan Toney scores!
Madison passed the goalkeeper and in.
Madison scoring again at the weekend. Cole Palmer's been absolutely terrific.
Lazy enough to Gordon! And there's the goal
for Newcastle.
I think his form this season has been consistent, which I think is what Gareth will be looking for.
You have to be talking about Ross Barkley to play in that holding midfield role.
I've got to focus on my job here at Ajax, and if I'm doing that well and I'm performing well, then that gives us the best possible opportunity to get into the England squad.
Does Marcus Rashford still go to the Euros?
At the minute, I'm not sure. There was a time I would have said 100% he goes.
Our biggest problem is going to be defensively.
Someone might emerge.
Now he's young, Branthwaite. I'd be very, very tempted to take him as that third, fourth choice centre-half.
It's a thunderbolt from Ben White.
Tino Livramento is the subject of more Newcastle chance.
With the problems we've got at fullback, he'd 100% be in my England squad.
So there's always room, but also with only four games to go to a European Championship.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.